It was an era when the demand for babies met the supply. The period between about 1950 and 1980, when it's estimated that around 150,000 Australian children were adopted out, often through family shame, frequently under a veil of secrecy, and sometimes not under conditions that might meet what we term today informed consent. You'll recall a few weeks ago that the federal government announced a forthcoming apology to those who had been state wards, the forgotten Australians, that will also cover child migrants. But it's now been suggested that an apology might also be issued to people separated by forced adoption, where children were taken from their mothers under duress, often after the women had been institutionalised during their pregnancies. But not all those who went through this want an apology. Instead, they'd like an inquiry. Anne went through this and she joins me now. Anne, hello, and thank you very much indeed for agreeing to tell me your story.
Hello, Genevieve.
Can you tell me what happened to you when you fell pregnant?
Well, my parents were very upset initially. And then once they'd calmed down, they suggested that I go to a home for unmarried mothers. I was only too happy to get away from the stress at home, and so I gladly went there.
How long did you spend in the institution, Anne?
Okay, approximately 7 months. So it was as soon as they could get me in there, off I went, yes.
And tell me what that time was like. Did anyone from your apart from your immediate family know where you were?
No. I must say, though, I wasn't aware of how important the secrecy was to my parents at the time, as when I returned home after having my son, I immediately informed my grandmother that I'd had a child. And when my mother found out about this, she was terribly upset, although she did, she often mentioned to me, throughout the course of my pregnancy that, different relatives were snooping around trying to find out where I was, and that always upset her. But I don't think I was as worried as she was.
So you were effectively hidden away from family,
yes,
friends,
yes.
Anyone outside your immediate family?
That's right. I only had... I can remember about 4 or 5 visits from my family at the most while I was there. And recently my sister told me, and that was because my parents stressed to her that I needed to be it needed to be kept a secret, and I needed to do this by myself. So when I started to show, I remember my mother saying to me that you won't be able to come home now because people will know, people will find out. And of course, at that time, I didn't make the connection that to hide the pregnancy precluded the choice to keep the baby.
Mm, if no one knew you were pregnant, then
yes.
you couldn't reappear with a baby, could you?
That's right.
Did you and the other women in the institution feel great sense of shame surrounding the whole
thing
of being pregnant?
There's no doubt about that, but people's particular circumstances are different, and I was 2 months off 16 when the cooling off period expired.
Mm.
You were very
young at the time, Anne.
Yes, but the process of being pregnant does prepare you to become a parent.
Tell me what you did while you were in the institution.
Okay, while I was there, I was supposed to be doing my school certificate, but I remember just feeling very lonely most of the time, and very difficult to apply myself to those studies because I didn't have anyone tutoring me there or giving me encouragement to go on with them. So I think they just passed me in the end, even though I don't think I looked at them more than a couple of times.
During those really lonely months, did you think what might happen to the baby? Were you turning that over in your mind?
Oh, yes. I was pretty convinced that I could, convince my parents in the end to allow me to keep my child. So I wasn't, I suppose I lived with the threat of it. My parents were not pleased, but I always thought that I could win my father over in the end, because he's a very compassionate man, but I think he just got caught up in the ideology of it as well, we had to preserve the ideal family.
What happened when your baby was born, Anne?
Okay, when my baby was born after 19 hours of labour, I asked, I saw them take him to the side, and I had to then ask, you know, may I see him? And at which point they brought him to the bedside for a very short time, maybe 10 seconds, and then took him away again. And the next thing I recall is waking up in a corridor at the hospital and, you know, disoriented and not really knowing where I was. And the following day, I had to actually go searching for him because I didn't know where he was. And that it was then that I was told I could see him for 1 hour a day.
Were you allowed to hold him, to feed him?
I wasn't allowed to feed him. In fact, 2 hours after my labour, my medical records show that my breasts had been bound. And 5 hours after that, it showed that I was having difficulty breathing. And that's how tight the binding was. And having had several other children, I know that the milk doesn't start to come in that early. So I have since discovered that this was part of their experimentation to prevent bonding with the baby.
Oh. And was it ever suggested to you by anyone in this period immediately after the birth that you could keep the baby?
No. The push was always that I had to do the right thing. If I really loved my son, I would give him up. And so that was very confusing for me because, you know, in order to prove my love for my son, I had to give him up. So, but my consent was taken only about 3.5 days after the birth, whereas the legal minimum at the time was five days.
I know that you've been able to see your medical records about what happened to you at this time. Tell me what they show you about the process.
Okay. Well, when I initially read them, it was a very upsetting experience for me. I went away by myself all day because I couldn't see anything there apparent initially that would support my story, and so I was devastated. However, as I started to read through, I saw lots of things implied in there. For example, I was on the fourth floor and my son was on the third floor nursery. So that showed me straight away that we were separated from the labour ward. And I know that my sister had a child at the same time, and she had her child on the day that I was coerced into signing the consent, and so she was a witness to the differences between the way we were treated. And her son was on the fourth floor nursery, so there was definitely discrimination there happening. What else can I tell you?
What about your interaction with the social worker and what they told you at the time about your choices?
Well, they didn't tell me anything. They didn't encourage me at all to keep my son. And some of the comments that were written down there were very condescending. And she knows her parents prefer her. Her parents are leaving the decision of adoption to her. So she knows her parents prefer her to have baby adopted out. They always referred to my baby as baby, you know, because we're always very impersonal. And then it went on to say that she's finding it difficult to deal with her father's very rigid old style Catholic standards and is trying to work her own standards out for herself. But never, you know, I mean, to me that implies, and I remember very clearly, you know, relating to the social worker my desire to keep my child.
And there's no record of that appearing, is there?
No, I can only see, I can only read between the lines where it's apparent to me that I'm saying to her, I'm not very happy about this. You know.
And you feel, I know, that you were coerced into giving your baby away.
Mm.
When you lost your little one, did you then return to the world as though nothing had happened?
Well, initially I was quite depressed for a while, but I think an overwhelming sense of numbness, of shock and denial. And then, of course, what is a normal way to grieve when your child's been taken against your will? What do you do? Your child is still alive. You can't start, you know, grieving for a child that's dead. And so, you know, what do you do? So, you know, it's just this disbelief, this numbness, this anger. I recall receiving a letter from the adoption agency a couple of months after the adoption was cooling off period had expired, which was telling me of how much the new mother, you know, adored her new baby son, and I'm glad to hear that the mother has resolved her decision now, and so on and so forth. And I was so angered that I just screwed up and threw it in the bin. I wouldn't show it to my parents.
Did you have any discussion with your family then or later through the years about the adoption?
I think it was always covert, you know. It was very difficult to, you know, there's still a lot of secrecy surrounding it for my parents.
Mm.
You know, some of my relatives didn't even know up until recent years about my son. And there was so much shame and humiliation associated with those memories that you just had to deny them. You had to put them into denial. And
have you been able, as an adult, to contact your son?
Yes. I made contact 5 years ago. I didn't go through the authorities that I was required to go through. I think all my actions were very consistent with a person who has been, you know, not with somebody who has freely relinquished her child, you know. So I had to find a supply authority to say that I wouldn't make contact, unauthorised contact. I was meant to go through the Post-Adoption Resource Centre. But nevertheless, I went straight to the phone book and I found him. It was a little bit difficult.
It must have been extraordinarily difficult to think about how you would tell him about these circumstances.
I wasn't ready at the time, because my children encouraged me to go ahead, and I thought I was ready, but that's when it was really all just beginning for me. I started to see that, that my son had also swallowed the lie as well, and I found that very confronting.
I guess the difficulty for you as a relinquishing mother is to be able to explain that you never wanted to give him away in the first place.
That's right. In fact, I didn't. Not that I didn't want to. I didn't give him away in the first place. Mm. You know, Justice Chisholm has described it as kidnapping in a non-technical sense, for his words, in the final report of the Inquiry into Past Adoption Practices.
You believe, Anne, that many relinquishing mothers were in fact treated both illegally and in a discriminatory fashion. Tell me why.
Well, it was for a lot of us, obviously, because we weren't married, and that that is obvious by the titles of the homes that we went into, homes for unmarried mothers, and because we were treated differently to married women on the ward, in that our children were. We were separated from our children at birth, and they were separated from us, and there were restrictions put on us as to access to our own children. Our breasts being bound, there was no permission given for that. And for the child, on the grounds of legal status, because the child was illegitimate, as they called them, and a child has a right to be raised by its own mother.
And if we go to the issue of consent, many relinquishing mothers were not adults. And so there is a legal issue there, you believe?
Well, we were what they call emancipated minors.
What does that mean?
Well, what that means is our parents were probably under the misconception that they were our carers, but we were our children's carers. That means that we were no longer under the authority of our parents, but our children were under our authority. Not under the authority of our parents. And we were the sole legal custodians of our children, though our consents were not valid, because we still couldn't sign a consent until we'd reached the age of majority.
In fact, in the year 2000, a New South Wales parliamentary inquiry found just that the adoption processes of the time had been substantially unlawful.
Yes, that's right. That's right, and this is a problem with Jenny Macklin's reference to those same practices as inappropriate or unethical, when they've already been described by the Parliamentary Committee into Past Adoption Practices as unlawful. So an apology is not really going to correspond to the truth of the matter.
Are you concerned that an apology, which is now being suggested in line with the apology being offered to the forgotten Australians, the survivors of state care, would be nothing more than a formality in your case?
Absolutely, yes. There's a number of reasons for that, but I think the main one being that the past adoption practices having been described as inappropriate or unethical, as well as the fact that the nationwide extent of the crimes to which such an apology would correspond are still remain unknown, because we haven't heard from people in other states.
If we go back to the apology that was offered to the Stolen Generations and to the one which is pending for the Forgotten Australians, do you concede, though, Anne, that people at the time often genuinely believed that they were doing the right thing?
No, I don't. Because we were told that the choice would be ours, and the choice wasn't ours. So I don't think there's any justification for telling lies.
I mentioned the New South Wales Government inquiry. Have there been any other inquiries or attempts to understand what happened in this adoption boom era?
I've got here in front of me Human Rights Commission discussion paper number 5 on the rights of relinquishing mothers to access information concerning their adopted children. And in there, there's a section on suggesting a class action of mothers on the basis of discrimination, on the basis of marital status. As for any other committees, I only know of the one for New South Wales.
So, Anne, the prospect of an apology is one that you don't welcome, that you feel wouldn't achieve anything. Is that correct?
Well, it might achieve something for individuals who are, you know, some of the women now are in their 70s and it's all they can hope for before they die. So I think it's going to achieve very little, because, you know, to me it's like the government is in effect saying, we're sorry for whatever you think was done to you. It's just being tacked on like a last-minute thought to the apologies for the Forgotten Australians and lost innocence. National inquiries have been held for a lot less reasons than the theft of 150,000 babies.
And you're involved with Origins Inc, which is an organisation that supports people who are separated by adoption.
Yeah.
Perhaps we could just give the web address, because I know there's a petition running for those who believe that that an inquiry is warranted, rather than simply the apology. Just originsnewsouthwales.com.
Yes, it's originsnewsouthwales.com, and there's a link up the top, National Inquiry Petition, and if they click on that and scroll down to the bottom, they can sign the petition and leave a comment there.
Anne, thank you very much indeed for sharing your story with us. It's a powerful one, and I think plenty of food for thought on an area that's still very contentious in our society. And I want to thank you very much indeed for your time.
Thank you, Genevieve. Thank you for having me.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, good night.